You and I getting together for a Thursday, September the 7th, 2023 edition of Connecticut Today. We looked at the state's continued push for more marijuana businesses, including an offer for some special funding. Only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by with the latest on the upcoming Bridgeport mayoral primary. And Sacred Heart University government and political science scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, talked about efforts to keep Donald Trump off of the 2024 ballot in Connecticut. Let me, if you will, let me preface this by saying that if a properly aged legal adult wants to do anything concerning using marijuana or legalized cannabis, as it is called, that's fine. If you're of age, if you're 21 or over, if you are a growing pot at home, which you now can do, a maximum of, what is it, 6 plants, 3 mature, 3 little kids, 3 sproutlings, whatever you call them, you can do that. It's got to be locked up at your casa, your place of business, whatever. You know, you can do the seedlings, you can do the mature plants, you can do all that, or you can buy from a dispensary. That's fine. So that's not, I'm not criticizing anybody anywhere, anytime for using marijuana, of course, medically, but we've had that for years, but recreationally. Now, if you're of age, I've got no problem with that. Now that I have said that, I'm starting to wonder here if we're just, I don't even know how to say it. If we're just out of a sense of guilt, out of a sense of, you know, white guilt, out of a sense of, you know, oh, we did so poorly by some people, that we're setting up all these programs, all these initiatives, all these funding avenues, and we seem to be shouting from the high heavens here. And I understand people are taking advantage of it. But this notion to just even look past federal law and say, oh, we're so sorry with what happened to folks years and years ago. Please get in the marijuana business. Now, I understand it's a difficult business. Hear me out here before you jump in here if you'd like to it. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. But, you know, over the past couple of days, Chris has had some stories regarding, and they've been in the media, and I don't besmirch anybody for taking advantage of this. But, boy, along with abortion in this state, I got to tell you, it's almost like the promotion and the urging of the state and other people to help people get in the marijuana business is almost becoming comical. Now, listen, I understand that some people may want to get into the business. It is legal. I get that. I understand that. Don't say it's the same as owning a liquor store or a store that sells wine or beer or spirits, because it's not. We can get into the pharmacology of this if you'd like. Again, marijuana and alcohol are not nearly the same thing. Okay, we'll get into that later if you'd like. But, you know, I'm seeing these stories. You're probably like, well, Paul, you know, why are you going crazy on this? Well, I'm not really going crazy on this, but I'm kind of wondering here. And if you'd like to chime in at 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Can the state just pump the brakes a little bit on telling everybody, hey, get in the marijuana business. Oh, this is good. Get in the marijuana business. Really? A new program will help Connecticut residents launch marijuana-related businesses. By the way, don't we have a gazillion people already applying for licenses here? How many of these places do we need? Well, Paul, you don't complain about package stores and liquor stores. You're right, I don't, because liquor and marijuana are two different things. You can have a drink and not be impaired. The minute you start smoking a joint, you're impaired. That's not me saying it. That's the science. you're pretty much sober a few hours after you sleep it off, or your renal system, your kidney system, your urinary system gets rid of the offending alcohol. It doesn't last for more than a few hours. You're no longer impaired. There is, because it's fat soluble, not water soluble, there is a lasting effect of THC, sometimes for days. I'm not saying you shouldn't use it. But can we pump the brakes on this a little bit, at least from the state level? What if the state started a program where there's going to be all this state assistance and how-tos to get into the liquor store business or the package store business? Don't you think people would be running it, racing in from Alcoholics Anonymous saying, hey, what are you doing here? What if the state said, hey, we're going to start a great new funding initiative for people who want to open smoke shops and sell vapes or sell tobacco? Now, you know damn well that would never happen. But for some reason, we have this maniacal fixation in this state that, oh, we got to get more people in the marijuana business. Well, why do we have to do that? Well, they deserve opportunities. Well, why? Well, you know, areas may have been over-policed. Well, okay. Did these people not know they were breaking the law? I love this notion of, well, you know, we have to make up for past problems. What was the problem? There were a lot of people who sold pot and used it that shouldn't have. It was the same way with booze 100 years ago. A new program will help Connecticut residents launch marijuana-related businesses. The Canna Business Revolving Loan Fund will provide business owners with financing of up to $500,000. $500,000 to push people to say, please get in the marijuana business. Excuse me? Why? Especially now that people can grow their own. Cultivate. Well, we know why they like. Well, there's two things. The state loves the tax revenue, and a lot of, you know, white suburban liberals saying, oh, my God, we treated those people of color so awful when we bought our own pot. They ended up in prison. Cultivators and sellers of cannabis products seeking loans through the program must own 65% of the business. Well, what are the odds of that? We already had stories over the past couple of weeks or a month or so where a lot of these equity applicants and others are basically what people thought, just the right skin color as big companies line up behind them. State officials hope this will help more businesses get started, as marijuana being illegal under federal law makes obtaining traditional financing difficult. Why is the state of Connecticut, please explain this to me, explain to me, Lucy, why is the state of Connecticut so hell-bent on having people get into a business that sells a product that alters your state of mind? Can somebody please explain that to me? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. This isn't the state saying, hey, we have these programs if you want to open up a really cool sandwich shop in your town or in your city. And, hey, we want to help you if you're opening up a smoothie location or a small gym or a small workout center. And I know there are traditional loans for that. And the state does say that a bunch of the banks can't get involved here because marijuana is still illegal under a certain set of federal laws. I get that. But again, why doesn't the state just sit back and say, okay, let's see if the feds are going to change this? Because now there's all this rumor that the Fed may do that. But man, oh, man. And there's another story here about a graduation of another program here in Norwalk. But again, my basic question is, why are we so, it seems, hell-bent on getting people, oh, start a cannabis business, start a cannabis business. Hey, start a marijuana shop. Hey, really? Really? And again, I have nothing against people using it, but there are only going to be so many users, right? Has anybody looked at, like, Economics 101? We've just had a couple of guests on this program about a month or two ago. you know, our friend Ben Zacks from Fine Fettle and some other experts saying, hey, you know, the market's really starting to shake out because there's a whole lot of people in this business. Yet why is the state of Connecticut actively trying to push more people into this? Are they still so guilty over the marijuana arrests from 10, 15, 20 years ago? I don't understand it. Oh, it's a great business to get in. Yeah, we get that. But it's expensive. And you're not growing weed in your closet anymore. And it seems that the state looks at this and they're trying to right some sort of societal wrong here. So again, you know, Chris had this story yesterday and I was thinking about it overnight. The state's going to start a revolving loan fund that will provide business owners with financing of up to $500,000 if it's a cannabis-related business, because the feds will not allow a lot of banks to take part in that, or the banks themselves are kind of, you know, pulling a Pontius Pilate washing their hands here. But can we back off on the weed? Jeez. I mean, it's like half the country is walking around stone now. Have you seen the complaints coming from the U.S. Open with the players and the spectators? You know, a short way from us in Queens, they say at night those nine matches is like you're getting a contact high. Honestly, how many people out there need to get stoned? And I know what you're going to say. And, well, Paul, if you have a glass, couple of glasses of wine, I agree with that. You know, they say anything over two glasses of liquor a day, you're an alcoholic. Now, I'm not an expert, but I've known enough people, and they've all said the same thing. More than two drinks a day, every day, if you can't get by with that and your mood changes, you're an alcoholic. But this whole thing with marijuana, can we please pump the brakes on it? I mean, between marijuana and abortion in this state, it's like, you know, to the church of the left here, it's like they're sacraments. I don't quite understand it. Well, I do. I say I don't, but I do. I'm being rhetorical there. Well, we need to give more people an opportunity to take advantage of a burgeoning market that saw them put in jail. Okay, and many of them were arrested and they went to jail. Why? Because ostensibly, if they went through the courts, they broke the law. What was so difficult about, geez, I don't know, following the law? All righty, at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We usually talk to this gentleman in the 5 o'clock hour. He's got a full calendar today, so we're going to chat with him right now. You know the website, onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi is with us. Lenny, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Uncle Paul, you call me a gentleman. I want a second opinion right now. Right now.
Second and third
opinion.
Never
do that again.
Well, you know, I do it. Hey, Lenny, what's going on? Our Bridgeport generation now votes, people. Again, you wrote another rather interesting piece. What's up with that and the general state heading into the primary on Tuesday?
Sure. It's amazing what rich people do with their money, in particular liberals from Black Rock neighborhood of Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. So you have Bridgeport generation now votes, which effectively is a independent spending political arm of State Senator Marilyn Moore. And mm-hmm. The treasurer of that organization, Niels Heilman, put nearly $300,000 of his own money into this action committee to support Marilyn Moore for mayor. But something happened on the way to the political party. She didn't qualify for the ballot. So this is a disclosure that's required by law. And you know, I've been writing about this in an organization that really is just trying to buy an election. And it's fascinating what wealthy people do with their money. But, mm-hmm. you know, God bless them for having enough money to say, you know, I'll put it into this committee and we want to get this person elected, except the person they want to get elected is not on the ballot. So the alternate question is, what do they do with this money? Do they try to wait for the general election and pony it up for another candidate? Mm-hmm. Does Moore run as a write-in candidate? She did that last time and failed miserably. Or does he say, hey, please let me have my money back. because effectively this is at the behest of his wife, who's a big Marilyn Moore supporter. So that's the intriguing thing. Also, the trap doors of city politics, just because you anticipate something's going to happen doesn't mean it will.
So this $300,000, Lenny, and I'm looking at the story you wrote on this yesterday here, you posted it. Has any of this been spent yet? Because all we heard of, or all I heard of, was that just under $100,000 from some group in L.A. or something. So now you talk about this $300,000 and you do have the expenditures here. You've got this well documented. So where is this money? Is it standing by? Has any of it been used? What's the deal?
Yes, approximately $60,000 or so. So some of it, most of it has gone toward Marilyn Moore's presumed campaign for mayor, which is now not going to happen unless she does it as a write-in, because she has no place to go. So they were spending it on canvassers and phone callers to try to get the message out about Marilyn Moore, but also this organization has endorsed and is supporting certain candidates for city council. So a limited amount of that has gone towards that effort as well. But most of it towards Moore in anticipation of her making the ballot. So what this disclosure is, by state law, 7 days before election, if you're participating in a primary, you have to disclose your expenditures, your resources to, in this case, the local town clerk. So these reports just came out, just the other day. And so doing a review of it, and as you pointed out, the last time we talked about this, it was an undisclosed amount for about $100,000.
Yeah,
but this time, it shows that Neil Simon, who's the treasurer of this organization that supports Moore, put up almost $300,000 of his own money.
Must be nice.
So now the question, they're probably going, what do we do now? we thought we had a candidate. We have no candidate.
Hey,
now.
Listen, Lenny, if they've got a few grand kicking around, they know where to find me. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I digress. Go ahead.
Oh, if they want to advertise on my site and your radio
station,
right. I'm all in. Keep it coming.
So now does Generation Now Votes and the Moore campaign or whatever? So obviously they wait and see what happens Tuesday. And so the scenarios here, Lenny, let's look at what you think. Give me a what if. Let's do the pregame show here, if you will.
Sure.
Okay, give me a what if Ganim wins and then a what if John Gomes wins.
Depends how close it is. So going into Tuesday right now, if you look at the early vote, right now, Ganim is leading in the early vote. So that doesn't mean Gomes can't win. It just places a premium on Gomes' operation to turn out a large election day, primary day turnout. And these things for primaries, they're really strange ducks because they're not like higher turnout general elections. Maybe about, I'm going to guess 20 to 25% of the Democratic electorate, based on, recent history, will come out.
Okay.
Somewhere between maybe 10 and 12,000 people. Ganim will do well on absentee ballots, their so-called early vote. And Gomes is not without resources. I mean, to Gomes' credit, he's raised about $300,000.
Wow.
And that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Ganim's at about $400,000. There's some independent expenditures in addition to that are aiding Gomes. But these things are all about, forecasting this is, identifying your votes in the final days and yanking them out. And I call this period I call it both controlled frenzy and candidate suicide watch. Because once you get into the final days, these things get everyone gets paranoid. Everyone gets completely paranoid about what's going on in the election. And it's the overanalysis and the overthinking about everything that happens in a campaign and the outside influence of the campaign, they are sinking in and really, really hard. So, we've got 5 days out, and there's going to be a lot of absentee ballot action. There's been over 4,000 requests for absentee ballots.
Wow.
As we talked about earlier, why? The state of Connecticut has made it easier to vote that way.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is fear the thought of the potential of being sick on election day, and you could fill in an absentee ballot. That's the state law. So they're all working it really, really hard to just put those votes in the bank. And by Tuesday, I mean, you're going to have, so just because 4,000 requests have come in doesn't mean 4,000 are going to vote that way. You know, you'll probably have 2,500 people to 3,000 that will actually cast, you know, ballots that way. Mm-hmm. But that's a significant chunk if you have like 10 to 12,000 voters turn on primary day. So, you know, it's these things, the primaries are so very, very tricky to call in this stage of Bridgeport voting.
A couple of minutes left here, Lenny. I want to ask you about another announcement here. Yet another music venue coming to Bridgeport down by the water there. And for guys like you and me, about the same age, and for people growing up, many artists they performed at the Fillmore West in San Francisco and the Fillmore East. So the Fillmore brand, and a lot of classic albums at those venues. Now there's a Fillmore coming to Bridgeport. What's that about?
Yeah, and so the Howard Safon, who is the creator, the brainchild of the Hartford Healthcare Civic Center, as I call it, the amphitheater.
Yeah.
He's put together a coalition of Live Nation and Oakview Group, which is a huge concert destination promoter as well. And they're all joining forces together to build this local Fillmore East. This is a different kind of brand than the 10,000-seat arena or the 6,000-seat amphitheater. This is a little bit more boutique-y. It'll probably be 2,500 to 3,000 capacity, but they're going to build it along a grassy area between the amphitheater and the arena. And so this is interesting because Oakview Group operates the arena.
Yeah.
And Howard Safon operates the amphitheater, so they're actually working together on this project, and for me, it's credible because if you just look at the track record of the Howard's had in Bridgeport, another exciting announcement for Bridgeport because I don't remember when your hair was long, but I don't have enough hair left to be representative of anything like you in your youth, but it's great, and so Howard Safon and Live Nation, they're also the promoters of the Sound Ensemble Music Festival at Seaside Park, which will take place later this month. We're going to have John Mayer and Alanis Morissette and the Hot Chili Peppers. So they're looking at it 2025 opening for this particular venue. Yeah.
Excellent. So the Fillmore franchise comes to Bridgeport. The website only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi is the guest, as he is every Thursday right here. Lenny, thanks. We'll talk to you next week and have the post-game show of the primary and the pre-game for the election. Take care.
I'll be here. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Okay. Appreciate it. All right. Trying to straighten it all out. 3 hours down. One to go. How are you? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. There is growing momentum now in some other states and apparently here in Connecticut. Stephanie Thomas, the Secretary of the State in Hartford, is getting calls from people saying, hey, Donald Trump cannot be, we don't think, on the White House ballot come 2024. Is that possible? Everybody's talking about one aspect of the 14th Amendment. What if he's not convicted of anything? What if he is convicted, but he appeals? And this has happened a couple of times before in history, running from prison. To talk about all that and more, Sacred Heart University Government and Political Science Scholar in Residence, Dr. Gary Rose is with us, one of our longtime go-to guys on this. Gary, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Well, good to hear from you.
Gary, have you told your early students here, I'm assuming classes at the Heart are back underway, have you told them this is not normal? Have you told them not to freak out yet?
I know, four indictments, I know, and now talk of invoking the 14th Amendment, Section 3, and we just had a good discussion on that in my political parties class. And
yeah.
A lot of students actually were unaware of it, and it's understandable why they're unaware of it, because, you know, it's one of these that amendment, well, the amendment, most people know about the 14th Amendment, you know, in terms of equal protection
sure.
and all of that, but
yeah.
most people are not aware that within the 14th Amendment is that provision that you had already talked about, where you could actually prevent a public official from running for office who has engaged in insurrection and rebellion.
And that was born out of the Civil War, correct, Gary?
To keep
Southerners out of the government.
Yep. Yeah, Confederate leaders to prevent them from running for office. And so here we are now with Donald Trump, and there is a movement underway. I just read in the paper today that Colorado, I guess, is really moving in that direction to take him off the ballot and then invoking the 14th Amendment. But, you know, experts, Paul, and I know, like you say, here in Connecticut, there's some effort now underway, too, to use that. And it appears that a state can do that, but then it's without a doubt that's going to end up, you know, before the Supreme Court before long.
Yeah, and I saw the Supreme Court, Gary, today. I saw the Supreme Court says they may step in on this. They think that this is that important that they think, at least enough of them, I think that they cannot remain silent on this. So here's a whole nother aspect of that.
Well, sure. They're going to have to, in the end, get involved. You know, some of these issues like this always have to end up before the court. My question or issue with the whole thing is, you know, was January 6th a rebellion and was it an insurrection? Can we really define what happened, you know, on January 6th as one of those two types of events? And that, I don't know. I mean, I think that can be really debated. And when I think of an insurrection, I mean, I'm not sure I think of what happened on January 6th and even a rebellion itself, you know. I mean, it was an upright, it was a violent assault on the Capitol. But when we start using terms like insurrection, you know, then that to me, it just seems like it's a much higher level activity than what happened on that day.
Yeah. And Gary, you and I have read that. You know, his defense, I guess, Mr. Trump's defense in the trial may be, you know, what lawyers have told me and prosecutors is a state of mind defense. Okay, it may have gotten ugly, but he never directly told them, hey, attack the Capitol. And yeah, this is not, you know, a lot of my friends on the left, Gary, and you probably hear this in your life too, they think these cases are all slam dunks, and they're not. Now, lawyers have told me, actually, the document case is the case that, you know, might be the easiest prosecution, but Georgia and January 6th are not, from what I've been told.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly with January 6th, I mean, we get into the whole issue of free speech and the First Amendment. And, you know, that, too, is at work here. And we do have a Supreme Court ruling out there from 1969 called the Brandenburg case, which set a precedent, which some legal experts say could be applied and which could not be, you know, used effectively to prosecute Trump, but instead to protect his right to say what he did. And so there are myriad legal issues going on with, you know, both the free speech part of it and then this whole effort to take him off the ballot using the 14th Amendment. In the end, it has to be resolved by the Supreme Court, everything.
Dr. Gary Rose is the guest, Sacred Heart University. Gary, and then there's the specter. Well, if he's convicted of something or if he's in jail, he can't run. Well, you've among the experts that have told me that's not true. And I was reading about this the other night. A very famous American labor leader, Eugene Debs.
Yes.
He got 3.5% of the vote, Gary, in 1920 while he was in jail.
Yes, a million votes. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. He did. Yes. I mean, there's no prohibition against being in jail and running for president simultaneously, as odd as that sounds. And yes, that's right. And he could be in a jail cell and still be a viable candidate for the American presidency. And in Trump's case, if he is convicted and sent to prison, but I don't see that happening, it's possible. But he could be the nominee of the Republican Party and a candidate for the presidency. Yes, absolutely.
Sure. Now, Gary, when we go to the numbers, and despite all that, he still has a vice grip lock on the on his base. Although there are more, we're still early, and there are more debates coming up, and everybody's kind of a buzz now, Gary, about the added momentum they see from Nikki Haley all of a sudden.
Yeah, she had a great debate. She really did, and she started to show really some expertise there on foreign affairs and very strong, thinking well on her feet. And the way she challenged Ramaswamy, I thought that was, objectively, I thought she did an excellent job. And, yeah, Nikki Haley actually could be the dark horse in all of this. And, she could. I know her poll numbers aren't all that strong right now, but I never would say that this nominating contest is over, despite the fact that Trump is polling at what now 59%. But nevertheless, we still have a ways to go, and some funny things can happen. And I think Nikki Haley is probably getting a second look by people. Sure.
I remember, Gary, early on in the Trump years, after he was inaugurated and the whole Trump-Russia thing started, I was reading a very good piece from somebody on the left at the time, and I actually think it was Matt Taibbi, who's kind of segued now to the right, but Matt Taibbi wrote something, and I'm just paraphrasing here, Gary, and he said, look, if you're going to go after Trump on this Russia thing, you better make sure it sticks, because if it doesn't, you're creating a martyr. And he may have been right on this, Gary. He may have.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And now the four indictments and everything, he could be perceived as a martyr. Yeah, absolutely. And, I would say that a lot of Republican voters like a martyr, and because a lot of Republicans today in here in American politics, they feel that they are a persecuted group. And, many of these evangelical Christians and so forth. And so they actually gravitate to somebody who is perceived as, the martyrdom and who has at least, being attacked, if you will, by the federal government the way that he has. And I think a lot of the Republican voters out there start to identify with that. I really do.
Finally, Gary, let's go to the gentleman in office, our president, Mr. Biden. Boy, CNN poll came out over the last few hours. Brutal, Gary. 39% approval rate. Mm-hmm. His numbers on the economy are just awful. And now people are really starting to wonder, Gary, about the age. And again, this is not ageist. We'll all hopefully get there later than sooner. But, people get old. But yet the party, Gary, the powers that be in the DNC, they don't want to hear it. But are they going to have to confront this, do you think?
Yeah, they're not going to let RFK Jr. or Marianne Williamson debate, which is unfortunate. You can see them closing ranks around Biden, and I'm sure many of them are rolling their eyes. They don't want to do that. At the same time, I'm sure many of them do feel that Joe Biden is still the candidate who can beat Donald Trump and is electable. And that's what's important, to maintain that power. And taking on an incumbent, as you well know, is extremely hard, in a nominating contest. And so, most Democrats do know that that his cognitive abilities have declined. But at the same time, he's their meal ticket in terms of holding on to power.
And finally, Gary, one thing I didn't think I would ever see, and I think it's shifted since then, but I didn't think, and this was publicized a few weeks ago, that we would see a sitting vice president like Kamala Harris have lower poll numbers than Dick Cheney. And when I saw that, I said, wow, is it lower than Dick Cheney, lower than, Mr. Speller, Dan Quayle. Yeah. And yes, Nikki Haley, we talked about her a few minutes ago. She has come out and said, if you vote for Joe Biden, you're voting for Kamala Harris. And boy, I bet you the powers that be of the DNC are wondering how that's going to shake out.
Well, and that is actually a good Republican strategy, objectively, because it is true, as you say, Kamala Harris has lower approval ratings than Biden, and so many Americans see her as simply just not ready for prime time. And, you know, she laughs at things that are not funny, and her words get mixed up in terms of what people call word salad. And she can't seem to think very well on her feet when she's in front of an audience. And her interviews are awful. And many people, I think, will think of Kamala Harris when they go to the polls, because it is true. If Biden wins, you know, the question is he capable of finishing his a second term? And if not, then we have President Harris. And for many voters, you're absolutely right, Paul, that's a very frightening prospect and scenario. And that could be the reason why the Republicans could win that election. Mm. And it is the fact that Kamala Harris is Joe Biden's vice president and running mate still.
And on that note, Gary, thank you. There's no shortage of stuff for you and your classes this semester, is there? The syllabus writes itself, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I need a syllabus. It just keeps rolling.
Just keep the TV on, that's all. Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University. Gary, always great to have you. We appreciate the input. Thanks.
Okay, Paul.
Appreciate it. Dr. Gary Rose there.